You know, I was going to do this episode a little early, and thank God I didn't, because the bevy of news we have gotten over the last 24 hours has been insane. Nathan MacKinnon gets paid, Chara Subban and Yandel call it a career, Jets don't have a captain going into the season, and the Rangers trade a former first-round pick. There's PTOs, other signings, injury news. We got a lot to tackle here on the 150th episode of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Let's go. Yes, Tuesday, September the 20th, the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Your host is always Kyle Gamard. I appreciate you tuning in. And if you want to listen to other episodes and episodes moving forward, you can do so on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. If you don't have those, you can go to anchor.com. I am shared on about 7 or 8 different platforms if you want to go check me out. Social media has been busy. Instagram and Twitter, ST Hockey Podcast. And so, little life news before we get into the podcast. So my fiance is opening up her own business. So I have been going back and forth helping her literally build it, building countertops for a cafe that is opening up in Guelph. It's called Reset Social Cafe. We've been doing this now for months, and we are right at the precipice of opening. And it's just been a lot of trips back and forth. And yesterday, you know, when I came home afterwards, I figured I wanted to fit it in just in case I didn't have time today to do it. And I said, nah, it's okay. I ended up going down anyways, and I was too tired. And I said, I'll just do it on the regularly scheduled programming. Thank God I did. And thank God I waited till the afternoon, because I was going to try and do this in the morning. Nathan MacKinnon gets the bag. We're going to break that down. Chara, Subban, Yandel, all of them retiring from professional hockey. The Jets stripped Blake Wheeler of his captaincy. Nils Lundqvist gone from New York. Other PTOs, injury news. My gosh. Let's start this thing off. Let's get into it. We will start with the breaking news story. Nathan MacKinnon got paid.
MacKinnon on it. He's on his horse, powering through. The speed burst. What's to Kelly? My goodness, what a goal from Nathan MacKinnon! Hat trick, baby!
Are you kidding me? Unbelievable. That's one of the best goals I've ever seen in playoff hockey right there.
The Avalanche announced earlier today, probably within the hour of me recording this, Nathan MacKinnon locked up to an 8-year contract extension that starts in 2023-24. He has 1 year left on his current deal that I believe is worth only $6.3 or $6.1 million. So this deal makes Nathan MacKinnon now the highest paid player in hockey, ahead of Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Artemi Panarin, all of those guys. He was the first overall pick in the 2013 NHL draft. You know what's funny? Nathan MacKinnon is 27 years of age. Feels like he's been in the league for like a decade, maybe 12 years. And when he signed his last deal, he had never really broken out as a true superstar player. I think he had 60-something points in an 80-game season with Colorado. And then he signed, I believe, a 6-year deal worth that I'm going to look it up. But I believe it's $6.3 million. And even at the time when that happened, some people were like, I don't know. Like, MacKinnon really hasn't shown that he is that breakout player. And as soon as he signed that deal, he exploded onto the hockey world and really made his presence felt as one of the elite players. So sorry, it was a 7-year deal at $44 million, and I was right, $6.3 million was the cap it. The new one that kicks in is an 8-year, $100 million contract with an average annual value of $12.6 million. The deal has a full no-move clause, so he is no longer being able to move. He cannot be traded. And even on his current deal, God forbid something happens, His last deal, or his last year on his current deal, also has a no-move clause. He had a modified no-move clause in 2020-21 and in 2021-2022. He has a full no-move clause kicked in this year and moving forward. He ain't going anywhere. McKinnon finished second on the Avs this season with 88 points, playing just 65 games. He also has a couple of incredible seasons. He is the fourth Colorado Avalanche in history and the first from the 2013 NHL draft to hit the 600-point threshold. He also has a career 90 points in 77 career playoff games. I believe he's the fastest player to get there since Wayne Gretzky in that 70-game plethora. But this was the big conversation and was going to be the big topic of conversation all year long for Colorado. Colorado didn't bring back Nazem Kadri. They had traded away or let Darcy Kemper go. They traded Philip Grubauer. They're for Philip Grubauer, who has a two-year deal, a little bit lower cap hit. They re-signed Valeri Nichushkin. Kale McCarr is locked in for the next little bit. You got Rantanen and Landeskog both locked up. Nathan McKinnon was the last piece of the puzzle. And for the longest time, Colorado has really thrived and taken advantage of the fact that their best player, arguably, maybe outside of McCarr, was being grossly underpaid. Now again, we talked about this on last episode of the podcast. Before all these deals of these players getting signed 1 year out and getting a lot of money, it's not new. Nathan McKinnon got this. He got the 7-year, $44 million contract when I think his career high at the time was 60, I think it was like 66 points, maybe. But they signed it before he broke out as a player. One, he was only, I think, 21 or 20, it was 21 at the time when he signed the deal. So they knew that there was plenty of room for Nathan McKinnon to grow. But two, you sign it before a player breaks out and becomes the superstar that he is. That was Nathan McKinnon. Let's go through his seasons. Nathan McKinnon, rookie year, 63 points, 82 games. Sophomore season, 38 points, 64 games. 52 points, 72 games. 53 points in 82 games, signs the deal. Or he signs the deal that year. Because it was a 7-year deal. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yes. So he signs his 7-year extension. He goes out, plays all 82 games, puts up 53 points in 82 games, was a minus 14. Everyone thought, awesome. We just signed a guy to $6.3 million for the next 6 seasons. 7 at the time. And he puts up 53. Next year, 97 points in 74 games. Next year, 99 points in 82 games. Next year, 93 points in 69 games. Next year, 65 points in 48 games. Year after, 88 points in 65 games. When my fiance and I, we moved into our house, it'll be almost 2 years ago. We bought our house, I'm not going to say how much, but when we bought our house, it was literally weeks before the market exploded. We had no idea. It was just something that we were in the process of doing. We were naive and young, and we had no idea that it was going to be one of the best decisions we ever made. The Colorado Avalanche made this signing, not fully knowing, but having an understanding of like, listen, we got to sign him. He's a first overall pick. We see potential, but we just don't know. And then he exploded. It's a very loose metaphor, but you get where I'm going with this. Nathan McKinnon is made an argument for being the second best player a year ago in the playoffs, where he was absolutely on another level. And this year, he helped Colorado move past their threshold and win the Stanley Cup. And by the way, he has 90 playoffs. I got his stats wrong. 93 points in 70 career playoff games. Over a point, well over a point a game. He had 24 points in 20 games this past year. On his career, at 638 games played, 648 points. And that was including the first few years in the NHL where he was putting up under a point per game. And he has since skyrocketed. What this means for Colorado in terms of cap, I'm going to be very intrigued. Because the big question was, how is he going to find a way to fit in the cap? right? Colorado was already trying to figure out, and they unfortunately had let players go based on their cap situation. So now it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with them after the year. Because this year right now, they still have $1.9 million in cap because McKinnon's contract doesn't kick in until next year. But players that are currently on their roster that have 1 year left are very interesting and play a lot into this. Why this works, the first player who has 1 year left on their deal before they end, defenseman Eric Johnson. 1 year, $6 million. McKinnon right now makes 6.3. He will jump to 12.6. He literally doubled his money. Well, $6 million of that comes off the books when Eric Johnson comes off the books. After that, JT Compher has 1 year left at $3.5 million. Evan Rodriguez was just signed to a one-year deal at $2 million. We'll talk about that in a second. And then Cogliano and Darren Helm each have one-year deals at $1.25 million. They're each 35 years of age. Now, they'll have to sign RFA's Alex Newhook, and they got to sign Bowen Byram. But that can be taken care of after. For everyone who's concerned about how the Colorado Avalanche were going to find a way to fit under the cap with Nathan McKinnon's contract literally doubling, Eric Johnson's the answer. Eric Johnson in his final year at $6 million comes off the books. That essentially pays for the Nathan McKinnon upgrade. And you have got Bowen Byram who can fill in, and you've got Sam Girard and Cale Makar in the next wave of defensemen that are going to come into this organization, along with Josh Manson, who is there. They're going to fill the needs. They love Eric Johnson locker room, and maybe Eric Johnson signs on a much shorter cap hit, much smaller cap hit. But for all those concerned about how Colorado is going to do it, that's how. Congratulations to Nathan McKinnon. He gets the bag. Colorado keeps their young and Stanley Cup winning core together. McKinnon looks like he's going to be a Colorado Avalanche for life. Congratulations to him. All right, let's move on to the other huge news stories that came out, starting with Big Z.
On defense, in his 21st season, from Trenčín, Slovakia, number 33, Zdeno Chúral!
Zdeno Chara, Big Z, finally hanging up his skates. After 24 seasons in the National Hockey League, 45 years of age, Zdeno Chara signed a one-day contract with the Boston Bruins and retired as a member of that team after the team he spent the most years with, 14 in total. Chara posted on his social media page, after 25 seasons of professional hockey, 1,680 regular season games, 200 Stanley Cup playoff games, and hundreds of international games, I am proud to announce my decision to retire from the National Hockey League. In doing so, I am honored to return to TD Garden today to sign a one-day contract with the Boston Bruins and officially finish my career with the team that has meant so much to me and my family. There are so many people that have helped contribute to this success, including all of you, and I look forward to properly thanking everyone this afternoon. Of course, Boston was the team he spent the most time with. He was drafted by the New York Islanders, 56th overall back in 1996, spent four seasons on Long Island before joining the Ottawa Senators. In 2001, he was a part of that Alexei Yashin trade. Remember him? He broke out as an impact player in Ottawa, helping the Sens to a conference final appearance in four seasons. And then, of course, signed as a free agent with Boston in 06 and captain for all 14 of his years with the club. Led the Bruins to three Stanley Cup Finals appearances, including the one in 2011 that won them their Stanley Cup and broke the franchise's 39-year drought. He is one of only three NHL blue liners to play over 1,000 games with Boston. Ranks top five among the Bruins defensemen in goals, assists, points, power play goals, and game-winning goals. Yeah. Let me say that again. Zdeno Chara ranks top five in Boston Bruins history in goals for a defenseman, assists, points, power play goals, and game-winning goals. The big 6'9 defensive defenseman is top five in the immaculate Boston Bruins career in power play goals, game-winning goals, goals in general, assists and points. He was more than just a one-sided player. He then played at other stints in Washington, where he had one season before returning for the Islanders for one final year. And even at age 45, had 14 points, played 72 games, and scored a goal in his final game as well. He was, anytime a playoff matchup happened, you just knew you weren't getting anything done with him on the ice. As an opposing player, if you were matched up against Zdeno Chara, it might as well have been a waste of a 45 seconds. Even on the penalty kill, you couldn't move the puck down low. 6'9", with like, honestly, probably a 10-foot wingspan of his arms. The stick was almost as tall as him. Like, you couldn't get to within a 15-foot radius of this dude without him being within striking distance to poke the puck away, get some sort of contact on you, and you couldn't out-muscle him because he was bigger than you. He's bigger than everybody. And it didn't even matter who he played with. You could have put an AHL defenseman with him his entire career, and they were always probably going to be one of the top pairings in the NHL. He was that good. Really immaculate stuff, and just, you really came to know him as a person too, and the individual that he was. And you just grew to love him even more and more and more. He was unapologetically himself. He was as tough a player as you'll ever find. He was as good a leader as you'll ever find. And this is coming from a guy who cheers for a team who they are bitter rivals, who always got the best of them. And I still have this immaculate respect and appreciation for a player like Zdeno Chara to do what he did and the impact that he made. He made all-star games a spectacle. Him versus Shea Weber in the hardest shot, where what was it, 108 one year? He put up a 108-mile-per-hour shot, and people were just in awe of him and what he was capable of doing on the ice. He was as graceful a player as you'll ever see at 6'9". I remember him scoring a goal. I don't know if it was against the Leafs or not, but he faked a shot, spinorama at the blue line, walked in on his backhand, and roofed it bar down like he was Patrick Kane. It was nuts.
A little bit of a scene. Chara, the big reach. What a huge pirouette. And the big man scores. An incredible move. 6'9", and he's a ballerina. It's 2-0 Bruins. Wow.
I'm assuming that there are a multitude of people who have so many incredible memories of a player like that. But just congratulations to him, one of the longest tenured players to ever play the game. When you think of 25 seasons, you think of Gordie Howe, and you think of Jaromir Jagr, like guys who have 10 years that are 20 plus years. There's not a long list of guys with 24 to 25 years. So congratulations to Chara, and what an immaculate career. All right, next individual. Also announcing his career from the league, Mr. P.K. Subban.
Penalty's over. Subban's back on. P.K. Subban scores!
After 13 seasons in the league, the 33-year-old Norris Trophy winner announced his retirement from the National Hockey League after being drafted by the Montreal Canadiens, being a part of one of the biggest one-for-one swap trades in the modern era, and of course his stint with the New Jersey Devils. PK Subban is calling it a career. He was just recently given the King Clancy Trophy in recognition of his leadership and humanitarian contributions, particularly his involvement to social justice, COVID-19 relief. He's been an honor three other times. He is a Norris Trophy winner in 2013 and went on his social media pages and could quote, I never looked at myself or ever felt I was just a hockey player. I always looked at myself as a person who happened to play hockey. Having that perspective allowed me to enjoy every shift like it was my last, celebrate every goal with emotion, and play every game as if someone paid to watch me play who had never seen me play before. He's also one of the founding members of the Hockey Diversity Alliance, the organization that was launched by former NHLer Akeem Alou, along with other players of color back in June of 2020. Over his career in 834 games, he had 115 goals, 352 assists. He was a three-time All-Star, spanning in seasons of 2015 all the way to 2018. He was a second-round pick of the Montreal Canadiens, 43rd overall back in 2007. Really blossomed as a defenseman there in Montreal, of course, like I said earlier, before being involved in one of the biggest trades in one-for-one swaps in NHL history, or at least in the modern era. It was that same day that Taylor Hall was traded for Adam Larsson, and of course, Shea Weber was dealt back in return for PK Subban. He then went to the Stanley Cup Finals with Nashville. Shea Weber took the Montreal Canadiens to the Stanley Cup Finals as well. It was so funny because when that trade first happened, everyone immediately was like, oh, Nashville won the deal, because PK Subban was such an electric, massive presence. Anytime he touched the ice, you knew something special was going to happen, and you really felt it in that 2013 season. He slowly started to decline a little bit. He signed a brand new contract that paid him about $9 million per season. That eventually wrote him out of Nashville, going to go over to New Jersey. Slowed down a little bit, but I really think both teams, when you look at it now in hindsight with 2020 vision, I think both teams come out of it feeling like, we each had opportunities to go to the Stanley Cup Final. We each had really good seasons. We each had some good years with each player. And both players probably left and finished off a little bit earlier than maybe we wanted to. Shea Weber due to injury, unfortunately, and PK Subban just with financial reasons and a little bit of play decline. But you kind of look at it, and both players did a little bit of what each team thought they were going to be brought in to do, and no team really got robbed in the situation. So, in hindsight, I really think the deal benefited both teams to a certain extent. But I remember there were some electric moments of PK Subban on the power play in Montreal, just scoring some insane goals, Stanley Cup playoff goals, and you just felt like the dude at times was such a cheat code on the blue line. And PK Subban already has a huge career ahead of him in terms of broadcasting. I believe he has a TV show coming out called PK's Places, which is similar to what the Manning brothers, Eli and Peyton, do for the NFL. I think he's working with them to get that in production in 2024. So that'll be really good. Again, broadcaster. But also what he did off the ice, and the fact that there is a wing in the, I believe, the Montreal Hospital named after him for the Children's, I believe it's the Children's Health Foundation, but for the Children's Hospital in Montreal, he has donated north of $10 million to it in support of sick kids and really done some incredible work. So for as much as he was a phenomenal player, he is just as amazing of an individual. He is a very, very bright personality. He has all the attributes you want in a broadcaster, in a individual who is a spokesperson, and congratulations on a 13-year career for him. And the last player who has called it a career, Keith Yandle, after 16 seasons, is saying he is done, who is the NHL's consecutive games record leader for a little bit before Phil Kessel comes in, announced it earlier this morning on Spit and Chicklets, saying, I'm shutting it down. I'm retiring from the game of hockey. He said, quote, I'm really at ease with the decision. I'm looking forward to the next chapter for sure. He broke Doug Jarvis's Iron Man streak by suiting up in 965 straight contests. His streak ended at 989. So Doug Jarvis had the record of 965, and this record was broken by Keith Yandle. It stands right now at 989. Of course, Phil Kessel has the opportunity to beat that right now. But for those who watched Keith Yandle, and especially watched the last like year or two of his career, that did not justify the player that Keith Yandle was. He was one of the best NHL defensemen in his prime for a significant part of his career. Again, 16 seasons. He was the 105th overall draft pick in 2005. But the amount of seasons where he hit 60-plus points, specifically 2018-2019, he had 62 points. He had at least 50 points in four other seasons and retires with 103 goals and 516 assists over 1,100 games in the National Hockey League. Like, he was a point machine, over 600 career points in 1,100 games as a defenseman. He was elite on the power play. And defensively, yes, it declined over a little bit, but man, when you needed production on the power play or production from the blue line, Keith Yandle was the guy. Florida was really big. He had a couple seasons in at the time Phoenix, now Arizona. Also, especially with Spit and Chicklets, known as one of the brightest personalities, one of the biggest beauties in the league, for how he just treats everybody, how he's friends with a lot of people too. He is such a great individual to have in the locker room, from what has been told by him and teammates and whatnot. He has spent the final season with the Philadelphia Flyers. He played 5 years with Florida, part of two seasons in New York with the Rangers. And then his longest tenure was 9 years with Arizona, who were known, again, like I said at the time, as the Phoenix Coyotes. So three individuals, all calling it a career. What a day for hockey. And it's funny, it feels like the end of an era, even though they all had different time frames of their careers. It just goes to show the different complexions of how an NHL player goes throughout. You've got the long-tenured Zdeno Chara, who plays 24 seasons, and the dude never retires and then finally calls it. And it's just such a legendary career. First ballot Hall of Famer, 100%. Then you've got the middle, where it's like 16 seasons, really great career, over 600 career points, 1,100 games. It's like the quintessential career, especially for a guy who was drafted 105th overall. I believe that's the fourth round. And then you've got a guy in PK Subban who's a polarizing figure, former second round pick. You think 33, there's still a lot left in the juice, but man, when he was in the league in his prime, he was a force to be reckoned with. Congratulations to all three individuals on amazing careers, and good luck to all of them in the future as well. All right, let's get to some other news around the league. I think there's only really a couple other stories we got to get to here. The Winnipeg Jets are a very intriguing team. The Jets at one point had guys like Dustin Byfuglien and were making these huge, incredible runs when they moved over from Atlanta, when they were the Atlanta Thrashers. Winnipeg was rocking. You had these players. You drafted Hellebuck. You drafted Scheifele. And you just had this monsoon of defensemen. And they were a force. And slowly but surely, it's slowly being chipped away. You know, they missed the playoffs this past year. They got swept the year prior. And now this season, the Jets will begin the season without a captain. Now, why is this a topic for me? Because Blake Wheeler came out and said, you know, I don't need a letter on my jersey. Mark Scheifele came out and just said, you know, he's still going to be the leader. It doesn't change anything. But I think it does. When you're a captain of a team, it's almost like you have a role or responsibility. It's almost like you're glued or you're stuck with the team a little bit more, sometimes longer than maybe fans or organizations want. But because that player is such an integral piece, because they're wearing the C, it's almost like, how do we trade them? I wonder if this makes things easier for a move to get done. There were conversations. Pierre-Luc Dubois is likely there's potential of him not re-signing. I know he kind of squashed those rumors, but maybe he just went out of the media and actually said something and it didn't hold any merit. You know, Mark Scheifele has been criticized for his lack of effort at times. And Blake Wheeler has been speculated to potentially be moved, even though I think he's one of the better leaders in the NHL. Especially in those early seasons where they were making pushes in the second and third round of the playoffs. It just has me thinking where this direction of this team is going. You know, remember last year, Paul Maurice stepped down from the organization in December. They missed the playoffs for the first time in 4 years last year. you know, Paul Stastny, who's no longer a part of the team, he came out actually to a reporter and said that players lacked accountability and care for one another in Winnipeg. I would not be surprised if things don't start off on the right foot for the Winnipeg Jets this season. I wonder if there are major moves that are made. I wonder if a guy like Blake Wheeler goes. I wonder if Mark Scheifele goes. I wonder if Connor Hellebuck goes. And not because they want to get rid of these players, but they know that teams will look for a player like Blake Wheeler, who's a leader, who's a playoff performer, would come into a younger locker room and help out a team either get over the hump or get back into the playoff situation. I think a team would look at a player like Mark Scheifele and say, hey, here's a player that if we put him in the right culture can really succeed. And how many teams would want a goaltender like Connor Hellebuck over the goaltender they currently have? And what the return would be for those players? You know, we're going to talk about a trade just a little bit, but there's a lot of young players on teams where teams are, they're very short-tempered. You do not have a lot of time anymore to develop into a player. All the impact players that come out of the draft now, McDavid, Matthews, McCarr, instant impact the moment they touch the ice. The moment they touch the ice. Very seldom now do you have time to just wait on a player and develop for 3-4 years in your system. And the players that do that, let's just go with, I'm not going to count teams and players like the Minnesota Wild and Marco Rossi or Toronto with Rodion and Miroff, because both players have health issues and both still haven't been even given a chance because they've dealt with their own personal situations. But, you know, you look at a team who's drafted a player like Chicago Blackhawks and Kirby Dach. High-end pick for Chicago. First year kind of shows, and the second year kind of bumps back a little bit. Has a sophomore slump? Gone. Immediately traded. You know, I wonder if a team, let's say Toronto, for example, Rasmus Sandin has not played a whole lot of NHL hockey. Now, he was drafted a couple years ago, but now he's kind of in a contract situation right now. Toronto's trying to look to get rid of him. You throw Sandin, a pick. You don't think that those are the two players? If Toronto wanted a Blake Wheeler, for example, you don't think Winnipeg's like Sandin's the starting point? Because they're having conversations about issues for playing time. And that's a player that easily goes into Winnipeg's lineup and plays consistent NHL hockey. But that's like the starting point. Then you've got to give up a player. You know, like it's, there are teams out there with high draft picks and players who would give up a whole lot for Wheelers and Scheifele's. I'm not saying these players are getting dealt. I'm just saying if the Jets don't get off to the start that maybe they're hoping for, there could be big change within the organization. They missed out on the Barry Trotz sweepstakes. Of course, Barry Trotz taking some time. But they put all their eggs in one basket in that one. And then, you know, you don't end up training for the guy you want. And I'm very intrigued to see what's going to happen over there in Winnipeg. Just going to say. But no leadership, no captaincy for the Winnipeg Jets this coming season. The New York Rangers, after a request from Nils Lundqvist to be dealt, has been traded to the Dallas Stars for a conditional first-round pick in 2023 and a conditional fourth-round pick in 2025. Here's what the conditions are. If the Stars' 2023 first-round pick is in the top 10, the Rangers will receive a 2024 first-rounder instead. On top of that, the fourth-round pick, if Nils Lundqvist accumulates 55 points over the next two seasons, the fourth-round pick then becomes a third-round pick. Lundqvist was the 20th overall selection in 2018, requested a trade out of New York last week. He's only 22 years of age. He's listed as 5'11", 187 pounds. He's right-hand shot. Profiles as a more offensive defenseman. He had a goal and three assists in just 25 games as a rookie, but this past season had 15 points in 34 games with the AHL's Hartford Wolfpack. Now, as part of the deal, looking at his analytic numbers, he has a WAR percentage of 66% offensively. Very good defenseman. Defensively, not as strong, just 23%. Power play is a very strong asset as well, and has 2 years left at $900,000. Of course, his entry level deal. Right now, the Stars' defensive core looks like Ryan Suter and Miro Heiskanen, Esa Lindell and Yanni Hakanpää, and then Thomas Harley and Colin Miller. So there's a chance for him to slot in on the first unit with Heiskanen, and then Ryan Suter can drop down, Esa Lindell can drop down, Thomas Harley, and then becomes your seventh defenseman. Dallas, a team that, of course, lost John Klingberg this offseason, has been looking to try and fill that void. Miro Heiskanen was one of the players that was going to take on a bigger role, but they signed Colin Miller. They still have Esa Lindell. And maybe this is a younger player that can slowly fill in, take some of that offensive responsibility. The blue line right now with the Rangers is stacked. Adam Fox, Jacob Trouba, their captain, Braden Schneider. That's the right side alone. Then you've got the left side, which he's not really a left side defenseman. There's some defensemen that can play both sides. Amir Heiskanen is one of them, actually. He plays the right side as a left-hand shot defenseman, but Lundqvist gets the deal. He gets out of New York. Dallas gets a defenseman. They give up a decent chunk, but still just 22 years of age. Defense would take a lot longer to establish themselves and really grow into the players that they are drafted to be. So I think for both ways, draft picks, I've heard this on a lot of podcasts, draft picks are some of the more overrated assets being dealt. But sometimes there's a reason for that, because if you hit on a draft pick, right, you look like a genius. Think of P.K. Subban as a second-round pick. You're a genius when you're Mark Bergevin in that situation. Genius. Think of all the late-round picks that become studs in the NHL. Datsyuk and Zetterberg in Detroit. Pavelski when he was with San Jose. Like, these guys hit on late-round draft picks. You look like a genius. So who knows what the first round picks are, but Lundqvist to Dallas, a first and a fourth, both are modified potentials with conditions on them. The first round pick in 2023 goes to 2024 if it's in the top 10. And if Lundqvist has 55 points in the next two seasons, the fourth rounder becomes a third rounder. All right, let's finish up here with some news and notes, some signings and whatnot that have gone around the league. The Ottawa Senators signed Tyler Motte to a one-year deal with $1.35 million. 27 years of age, he did not have a point in 9 games with the Rangers this past season, but he was traded from the Canucks, who had 2 goals in 15 playoff games with New York this past spring. He gets into there, and we'll see how that works out. Flyer signs Senator Sean Couturier week-to-week with an upper body injury being reevaluated in training camp. This could potentially be a lot worse than what people are thinking. Week to week is very optimistic right now. There's potentially could be out even longer. Last year, playing just 29 games due to a back injury. He underwent surgery in February. He's going over final medical clearance right now, but he is the backbone of what he is. Such a good two-way forward, and Philadelphia fell apart when this guy was not in the lineup. So if he is not there again, they are going to be sorely missed. Oilers signed Jake Virtanen and defenseman Jason Demers to professional tryouts. I don't understand why bringing in Virtanen was a necessary move for the Oilers. He was found not guilty of a sexual assault charge after he was charged back in January. In May of 2021, a woman said in a lawsuit that Virtanen forced himself upon her and assaulted her in a Vancouver hotel in 2017. Despite her pleas for him to stop, he denied the allegations a month later. A lot of people aren't thrilled about this. I don't understand why you have to sign up. There are other forwards who we're literally going to talk about here who have also signed PTOs. Very interesting. Jason Demers, adept defenseman on the right side. That one I understand. Is not the player he used to be when he was maybe in San Jose earlier in his career, but both players signed to PTOs there. That's all I'm going to say on that matter. Just like confused to why Edmonton goes after, just especially too with, you know, the Evander Kane situation, which we're also going to talk about in just a little bit, but anyways. Calgary Flames signing Sonny Milano to a PTO. Very intriguing that he signed a PTO. Has enjoyed a career season with Anaheim. He had 14 goals and 34 points in 66 games. He's just 26 years of age, played over 15 minutes per game, played a lot with Trevor Zegras. He's a weirdly good fit in Calgary. That makes a lot of sense to me. especially with Calgary having a huge overhaul in their roster. I think Sonny Milano is a really good fit there within their middle six. I like the move, and I'm sure he's going to stick around throughout the course of the season. And the San Jose Sharks reached a settlement to terminate their contract grievance with former winger Evander Kane. This was on Friday. The Sharks have reached an agreement with Evander regarding the termination of his NHL standard player contract. The agreement has been approved by the NHL and the NHL Players Association. They are satisfied that its terms will not adversely impact the team, either financially or competitively, in this or future seasons. There was multi-million dollars left on the deal. Of course, he was given the option to go sign. He signed and extended there in Edmonton, but no longer has ties or contract situations with San Jose. Other situations going on personally are still waiting to be seen, but nevertheless, glad San Jose was able to reach that agreement, cut ties, and move on from that circumstance and really move forward with Mike Greer as the general manager and build a new culture and regime for this team moving forward. All right, that wraps it up today. Thank you, as always. What a day it was for the podcast. Follow along Instagram, Twitter, SD Hockey Podcast, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Tomorrow, the final day of summer, which means fall is here, which means hockey season is right around the corner. Enjoy the week. I will see you next Tuesday. Until then, that's a wrap.